Ed Wilson, Shawnee, Oklahoma. Be grateful for your prayers. Courtesy of your attention for a while. I've enjoyed this monarch. I've heard some good messages and got to visit with some dear friends. I'd like to talk to you about some gospel this evening by the Lord's help. And to mention again, I'd appreciate your prayers. There are some phrases in the scripture that have just kind of passed into the general language, and many times I think people use them and don't even realize where they really came from, like writing on the wall and like putting out a fleece. What's it mean to put out a fleece? It's folks think of it as a way of making a decision about which way to go in life, maybe, or what the Lord wants you to do. The idea comes from what happened with old Brother Gideon. I want to talk about Gideon this evening. I want to talk about, yes, the topic of my little discourse is putting out a fleece. It's found in the 6th chapter of the book of Judges. And it's interesting to know a little bit about the context of when this set of scriptures took place. Judges is before the kings. Judges is was kind of a dark chapter in Israel's history. The kingdom, in one sense, not like it was later, but in one sense, it was divided between the northern and the southern. Didn't really have a central government. But the worst part of that history is that those unfortunate people had been a long, slow, gradual decline away from the religion that God had provided them so beautifully on Sinai and through the other examples that he'd given them. They were a long decline. And so much of the old things had been lost. You read the things that happened that we can find during that interval, and it's hard to be sure how much many of those folks really even understood about the way God of their fathers had intended to be to them. Gideon falls into that category a little bit. And it was Gideon's fate to live in a time when the Israelite nation was dominated by the Midianites and other nations around them, the Amalekite in particular. The Amalekite were vagabonds. They were, well, they'd go in the summer up on one side of Israel and they'd have their dealings up there. Didn't really have much of a home of their own in one way. And then in the fall, they'd come back through Israel in a horde. And they were more like a mob, really, than they were a government. But they come back through, and because they outnumbered the Israelites vastly, and they defeated the Israelites and took all the swords they could away from them, disarmed them, put them at a great disadvantage, they just, like scavengers, would take everything that was in the land. Cattle, sheep, donkeys, camels, everything that anybody had. Grain, wintertime coming, didn't make any difference to those folks. They'd strip the harvest. If there was... If the Israelites starved to death, well, so much the better for them. That was kind of their attitude. They'd go through in the springtime on their way up to the other part of the country, and they would commit their ravages that time. Then they'd come back again in the fall, be pretty discouraging. Work all through the summer to put your crops in, and then just get them harvested, and they're in the storage barns and so forth. And then here come the Midianites, and here come the Amalekite, and just sweep it like a horde of locusts and take it all away. Year after year, that's what was going on. And, of course, the Israelites were doing, those of them who knew to do it, were crying out to God and saying, well, you know, we've heard these stories that our forefathers have told us about how we were all down in Egypt, and God brought us out of there, and we've heard about Ai, and we've heard about Jericho. What's going on now? What's it going to take for us to be able to get back where God will deliver us again like he did all of those people? And it wasn't that God wasn't willing to deliver them, but it was the things they let themselves get into. God made a mighty covenant with Israel. Oh, if they'd have been faithful to him, who knows what the prosperity might have been. Oh, it's the same way with us, folks. If you be faithful to the Lord, who knows what prosperity he may shower on your soul and mine. But they got away from that, and they had the cry. I guess it's the cry of the wise men who came to Jerusalem all those years ago and on down to Bethlehem. Where is he that is king of the Jews? Well, that was Gideon's cry. Why doesn't it work for us like it did for our ancestors? And he didn't have an answer for that. But he'd sneaked off in the mountains somewhere, some hidden valley, thought maybe the Midianites wouldn't find, plowed him up a few acres of ground, and couldn't have been the best soil, tried to scatter a little bit of wheat in there and get a little bit of crop that he could have to maybe support his family through the winter and hope he wouldn't get caught with it and so forth. The angel of the Lord came and found him. Judges 6:17. There came an angel of the Lord and sat under an oak which was in Ophrah and pertained unto Joash Abiezrite, and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, "The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." And that's what Gideon said, just what I've been trying to say to you. Gideon said unto him, "O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? And where be all his miracles which our fathers told us of, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt?' But now the Lord hath forsaken us." What a sad cry. Can you imagine anything that anybody could say that it'd be any worse than that? Why has the Lord forsaken us? Well, that's where they were. Delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. And so the Lord began the process of making a change in this country. Now, as it happened, that was the time when Deborah was a judge in North Israel. She judged there for 20 years up until the year 1184 before Christ. And it just happened. It just happened. Does anything ever really just happen in life? In 1184, the angel paid a visit to Gideon. And at the same time that Deborah was engaged in delivering the northern part of Israel, God called on Gideon to deliver the southern part of Israel. Folks, God's got a time in his world. It's beyond my understanding. I can't tell you why he orders things like he does. But I know this. When the Lord comes by to pay us a visit, that's our time. We need to pay attention to him. We'll never succeed in life if we tell the Lord, I can't get saved tonight. Let me wait until tomorrow. That didn't work for a man who wanted to wait until his dad was dead, was buried, who wanted to take care of his family. That won't work for you or me either. When God comes by to visit us, that's the time. He knows everything that's going on around us. He knew what the Midianites were doing and the Amalekite. He knew what was necessary to make the changes. We have no reason to think that Gideon knew anything about what Deborah and her consorts were doing in northern Israel. But God said his time. You don't know what God doing in the world around you, neither what he's doing in your immediate circumstances, nor what lies before you or my tomorrow or any of us into next week. We're utterly dependent for our very lives on him, looking into the future and having mercy on us according to his great wisdom. And so he did in this case. He sent the angel of the Lord, sat on an oak tree, which was in Ophrah. And here he met Gideon. Gideon didn't feel like much of a warrior. He felt pretty downtrodden. He felt pretty oppressed. But the Lord told him, "I'm going to use you to deliver this people." Now, folks have the idea sometimes that Gideon's idea of putting out a fleece was to determine the mind of the Lord. In fact, it really wasn't. it was a little wavering in his faith. The Lord had already met him here and told him what he wanted him to do. But when the time came for him to do it, then the ball had already started rolling, you could say. Well, I want to read you the 21st verse of this chapter and demonstrate how the angel confirmed his authority to Gideon. The angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes, because Gideon prepared him a feast. And there rose up fire out of the rock and consumed the flesh and the unleavened cakes. And then the angel of the Lord departed. The angel didn't eat any of them, but he touched them with his staff and set them on fire. And that's got something in it too. The touch of the Lord has got fire in it, folks. It kindles life. It can make all the difference in our souls. And so the Lord told Gideon by this means, I want you to be a mighty man in my hands, because I'm going to use you to deliver their people from the Midianites. That's what he's praying for. He's praying for somebody else to do it. He was praying for the mighty army to do it. I might go with the army. Don't put this on my shoulders. Oh, but the angel came and said, you're the man. And here's to prove it. Stretched out his staff out there and touched the offering that on the rock and set it on fire. Can't deny it now. Gideon said unto God, I'm in the 36th verse, thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said. Behold, I will put a fleece of wool in the floor, and if the dew be on the fleece only, and it be dry upon all the earth beside, here's putting out a fleece. Then shall I know that thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said. And it was so. When he rose up early in the morrow, thrust the fleece together and wringed the dew out of the fleece, a whole bowl full of water. How big's a bowl? He didn't say. He just said a bowl. I'm going to think it's bigger than this thermos down here by my feet. I can read what I want to in it, can't I? It doesn't say. I'm going to say it's a wash tub full. He just wrung it out because it was full of water. You know about the dews of Hermon? David wrote about the dews of Hermon. In that land, for months out of the year, there isn't any rain. And yet the land is fertile. And the reason is because there's a heavy dew. Nobody sees it coming. Nobody can control it. But every night it falls in quantity enough to actually water the crops, so that this becomes a lush and verdant valley that the Israelites have been able to farm there for centuries because of the dew of Hermon. So this is just more than we might have some droplets on the blades of grass out here in the morning. This is an exceptional amount of dew. And for this man to pray, let the dew come on my fleece only, this dew that comes every year, and it falls over the whole land, and it falls in such a quantity that it waters the soil, and it's all, it don't need to irrigate, it's all needed for crops, to say now, put that only on my feast, that's quite a thing to say. But it didn't satisfy him. Gideon said unto God, let not thine anger be hot against me, and I will speak but this once. Got a little bit of maybe fear of God in him when he said that, hadn't he? Gideon, I already told you one time, I seen an angel. I set your food on fire. I told you what I was going to do. Now I'm calling you to act on it, and it's time for you to start taking steps. And here you are wavering. There's a whole bunch of them Midianites. They weren't very nice people. I think Gideon's hand shook a little bit while he was drawing out his sword to start on that kind of episode. I'm not in a position to sneer at him. I think it would have been the same way with me too if I were in his position. But he prayed. He prayed, and the Lord had mercy on him, even though he was wavering in his faith. Folks, God does not require us to have perfect faith in order for him to have mercy on our souls. He rewards a little bit of faith. He's interested in finding anybody who's willing to come to him even a little bit. And so Gideon came and asked the Lord. It really was a prayer that really he had no right to ask, because he'd already had his command. Remember the scribes and the Pharisees said, Lord, show us a sign. And remember how the Lord replied to them? No sign be given them save the sign of the prophet Jonah. But this man, his inquiring is, on one end of it, he's got the command of the Lord. And on the other end of it, he's got another command from the Lord. And if you can get your prayer in between two commands from the Lord, even if it's not a very strong prayer, the Lord will have mercy on you and hear you with it. And so he did with Gideon. He didn't know Gideon this. He'd already told Gideon, but he was willing to give it to him. And so the Lord reaches and touches lowly faith, simple faith, humble faith. Gideon put out his fleece, and it wasn't enough. Wrung all that out of it. Yeah, but Lord, maybe that was an accident. Oh, yeah, have dew fall every night. And waters all the ground every night. But maybe this is an accident. Let me try you one more time. We'll do it the other way around tonight. And I'm going to ask you that the fleece stay dry and the water come all the land around us. And he came up the next morning. You know what happened, don't you? Gideon said, Lord, let not that anger be hot against me, and I'll speak this once. Let me prove, I pray thee. But this once of the fleece, that it now be dry, only upon the fleece, and upon all the ground let there be dew. And God did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground. Gideon was going up to fight a mighty foe. The reason Israel had been conquered was because the Midianites were stronger than they were. And now he's going out to challenge them. He and his people have been oppressed for years. Nobody's trained an army. Nobody's got very much equipment of war. They're not really prepared for anything like this. That in itself would seem to be overwhelming odds. But he was about to undertake this task in a way that is unparalleled anywhere in the history of the world. You know the story, perhaps? Gideon was to go out before the Lord, and the Lord told him, tell your people, anybody that's afraid, send them home. Cut his army way down. You'd think Gideon would send mercy. What are we going to do now? But the Lord wasn't satisfied with that. I want you to send everybody home who can't follow specific instructions in the dark without really understanding what it is that they're going to do, because I'm getting ready to run a bluff on the enemy. And I'm not going to spend the time to explain all of that to you. It's not the nexus of what I have in mind to talk about this evening. But the idea was these men were to be on the hills surrounding the Midianites, 300 of them. Swords, when any use to them, bows and arrows, they'd have been overwhelmed so quickly if that's what they relied on. But scatter them out there on the hills, and every man with a trumpet, and every man with a lantern, and a vessel over his lantern. And when you hear the sword of the Lord and of Gideon, you hear that sound, each one of you break your trumpet and show your lantern, break your vessel and show your lantern, and blow on your trumpet, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And the Midianites down there in the valley looked up on those hillsides, look over here, and here's a light flashing, and over there, and there's a light flashing, and all everywhere they look, they're just a mob. It's easy for them to get scared. My understanding is they thought every one of those represented about 1,000 troopers up there in the hills, all placed around them and all ready to attack, and it was dark and they couldn't see each other. And they started running into each other and killing each other, and all it was 300 men up there with some horns blowing and saying nothing but the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. But when God put his hand on it, they didn't have any ability to withstand it. They got terrified. They ran into each other, cut each other to pieces, and off they went back to their land. And the Israelites won a great victory that day. You know this has something to do with salvation, folks. The devil's going to treat you just like these Midianites were doing to Israel. And as long as you allow him to do it, he'll go through your land on his northern route, and he'll come back down through your land on his southern route, and he'll gather up everything in your life that's good or of any use or value whatsoever. All of your love, All of your joy, your hopes, your dreams, all the work you do to try to build yourself a future, the enemy of your soul is pleased to rob you of every last bit of it and leave you starving to death if he can. Year after year, year after year, talk about bondage. Nobody's able to do anything about it. Sneak off somewhere and try to cultivate just a few acres and maybe grow a little bit of wheat. Have some seed for next year. Maybe if they don't happen to find it, can't keep them from doing it. The enemy's just like that. I grieve at seeing what he does to those that I love in the world today. I would give anything that I have to be able to stop the march of the Midianites and the Amalekite through the lives of those that I love. But it takes God coming by with a fire to touch something. And folks, he wants to come by, and I mentioned a while ago, you can't tell him his time to do it. He wants to come by your soul in Monarch Springs, Missouri, 2025, and pay you a visit and stretch out the staff in his hand and set something on fire in your soul that can change you, that can make it so you get power and victory and overcoming grace that you never had before. It isn't your ability. It's the angel that came and sat down under the oak tree. Come over here. I want to talk to you, son. You're in trouble. Things aren't working out in your life. You gather in much and it comes to nothing. And when you do bring it home, I blow in it. And when you get a little bit of money, you put it in a bag with holes in it and it all falls out on the ground and it turns into dust and ashes. That's an unsaved life and the world is full of them. And the devil would afflict every one of us with just that kind of life if he could. And folks, you and I are not big enough to withstand the Midianites in this world. But when the good Lord in his mercy is willing to come down and touch your soul and say, now is your time. Today, I'm willing to do something with you. He's merciful. He doesn't require you to make a perfect consecration at first. You can put out your fleece before him a little bit if you want to. You don't need to. Gideon could have acted on what was given to him. But he chose instead to put out a fleece before the Lord. And he prayed, Lord, it is what you want me to do. Put the dew on the fleece. We can get so many lessons out of that fleece. God is able to be the dew of Hermon in your life. When all around you are dusty, dry, broken dreams, heartaches and sorrows and unfulfilled lives, the Lord is able to put water in your life. I know it's 9 o'clock on Friday evening. Everybody stand up for just a minute, would you please? I get drowsy too. And we can sit back down now, if you don't mind. So I put out his fleece. And the Lord put the water on the fleece. Folks, the Lord wants to put the water in your life. He wants to make you fresh as dew. He wants to make your life like a pool in the desert, a green place filled with rich and beautiful fruit. Our world is filled with sorrow and heartbreak and disappointment. But there is a place, thank God, where people have plenty of soul-saving water to drink and their souls prosper. And they're filled with delight and thanksgiving and godliness. And the Lord wants you to have that. So you can have your fleece before the Lord. He wants to give you the message here tonight. Here tonight that you can have water in your life. But Gideon wasn't satisfied. He put it out the other way. Lord, let the fleece be dry. Put water everywhere else. Well, I think of that this way. I don't think it's any injustice to the scriptures. There are so many slimy things in this world. There are muddy vices. There are guilty consciences. There are people who have been down in the pig pen with a prodigal son and wallowed in the muck and the mire and got caught in vices and addictions and filthy habits there are sloughs, swamps of bitterness and envy and hatred and darkness. There are greedy people. There are people who can never be satisfied with all the praise and recognition they can receive. Never satisfied until Adolf Hitler, all the world is set to bow down at their feet. What a wretched way to live. What a wretched way to live. Did you know that those things will drive you into terrible acts and fill your finest hours with darkness and hurt and disappointment? People who have lusted after money don't think about how much they thug. They think about the money they've been cheated out of. The little bit that it may have been considered, compared so often to the amount that's in their pockets. People who have never learned to forgive live in a slough, a mud hole of bitterness and disappointment and despair. And this is a symbol, perhaps, in what Gideon had before him in this case. If that's been your circumstance, the Lord wants to come down and pay you a visit and let you know that He is able to dry your life out and wash with the water of His Word all the muddy places off of you and put you under His blood and make you clean and white and free from all the filthy contamination that's in this old dark world. And so he was with Gideon. So Gideon started out, and God did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all around. Gideon was going out to do an original battle tactic that nobody had ever done before. Oh, God is calling you to an original battle tactic against the enemy of your soul that can give you victory that you've never had before. He wants to go with you in it. He's not going to do it by gathering together a great army, friends and counselors and love, mothers and dads and capability of other people. All those things have their places, and Israel used armies at other times. But your salvation is depending on you carefully following the Lord, and the Lord taking that seems so small and magnifying it against the enemy's power until it becomes overwhelming, and it will set you free. And that's my message this evening. I thank you for the courtesy of your attention. And I'd like to invite you, if you're here this evening and the old enemy's been after your soul, if the Midianites been going through your land and robbing you, why don't you say, I've had enough of that? Why don't you accept that the angel of the Lord has come by in Monarch Camp Meeting once again? I felt him here all through the meeting, haven't you? To stretch out his staff and touch your sacrifice and set a fire in your soul. And that's got a promise in it that you can be the one that your cooperation, your willingness to have courage can be the means that the Lord uses. Small though it is, trembling and unafraid you are, feeling that I can never do this, I can never live like the Bible teaches. I've tried it before, it won't work for me. Folks, the angel wants to touch your soul, and the Lord wants to come and defeat the enemy with a mighty defeat and give you the land again. There's a time. When this time came, Deborah defeated the enemy in the north, and Gideon whooped them in the south. Israel was a free country. A year before, nobody thought it was possible. It can be that way with your soul, too. Let's stand and sing a song, please. And if you're here this evening and you need something in your soul, why don't you come and talk to Jesus about it? Really, that's the best fleece to put out. Amen.